Part 1. Community Repair Cafe Booking. Good morning, Green Line Community Services. This is Anna speaking. How can I help?
Hello, I'm calling because I would like to arrange a repair cafe appointment for a small kitchen radio. I saw the notice online, but I wanted to check the details before I book.
Of course.
For that request, you want the electrical items table. We also have advice tables, but the appointment gives you more time with a volunteer.
That sounds right.
I was worried I had chosen the wrong session because the website lists several different tables.
No problem.
First, can I take your full name, please?
Yes, it's Meena Patel.
The surname is spelled P-A-T-E-L.
Thank you.
I have you down as a local resident. Can I take a contact number in case the volunteer needs to change the time? The number is 7742-618-935. Let me repeat that because people sometimes mishear it. 7742-618-935. Great, I have 7742-618-935.
And the best email address?
Meena
Patel at example.com.
Email is fine for the confirmation, but a phone call is better if anything changes on the day. We had places on 12 April, but that session filled this morning. There's one space on 13 April, although it's quite late in the day.
13 April is difficult for me.
Is there anything later in the month?
Yes, I can book you for 20 April at 11:30 a.m.
That's a quieter slot, so the volunteer should have time to look at the issue properly. 20 April at 11:30 a.m. works well.
Where exactly do I need to go?
I thought it was in the sports hall.
It used to be there, but the room has changed.
The appointment will be in room 3 in the Green Street Community Center. We'll put signs at the entrance as well.
Thanks for clarifying.
Is there a charge?
The basic booking fee is £5.
Replacement parts are paid for separately only if the volunteer confirms the price first.
That's clear.
What should I bring with me?
Please bring the radio and its power cable.
The session leader is Mr. Harris, and the confirmation email will include the same details.
Great.
If I can't attend, what should I do?
Please call before 6 o'clock the previous evening.
These appointments are popular, so early cancellation lets us offer the place to someone on the waiting list.
Understood.
So I'm booked for 20 April at 11:30 a.m. in room 3 in the Green Street Community Center, and I need to bring the radio and its power cable.
That's right.
You'll receive the confirmation within 10 minutes.
Is there anything else I can help with?
No, that's everything.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
That's the end of part 1. Part 2, Riverside Eco Park Open Day.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Riverside Eco Park Open Day. I'll explain the layout and the main changes before you start exploring. The first change is the venue. The event was originally advertised for the visitor center lawn, but it has moved to the restored boat shed beside the river. Please use the east gate. The other doors are for staff and deliveries only. When you arrive, go first to the desk immediately inside the east gate. Even if you booked online, you need to collect a program and a small map because several locations changed yesterday. If you need general help, the information point is left of the entrance beside the model wetland. Refreshments are on the right near the herb garden, and they'll be available for most of the day. Now picture the site as a long rectangle with the entrance behind you.
On the left as you come in, the first area is for children's nature activities. If you continue along the left side towards the back, you'll reach the pond life microscopes. These areas are easy to confuse because both have volunteers in green shirts, so use the signs rather than the color of the shirts. On the right side, the first section is solar cooking demonstrations. Further along the right side, in the middle, you'll find bike repair advice. At the back right, there's a shaded seating area at the back right. Please note this correction. The bike repair area is in the middle of the right side, not at the back. Some early programs printed the old position, so check the map you received today. A popular service today is the tree planting advice table. It was listed as stand 14, but it has moved to stand 21. General guidance is available at stand 6. The staff there can help you choose which activities are most relevant if you have limited time. The opening hours have also changed. Publicity said 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., but today's correct hours are 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. There will be a short welcome talk at 10:15 a.m. Remember that the advice tables close at 3 o'clock, so don't leave that service until the very end. For practical arrangements, please bring a reusable water bottle. If you complete stamps from 6 activity points, you can enter a draw to win a bird feeder kit. The main demonstration has been moved to 1:15 p.m. because the morning setup took longer than expected. Finally, please move slowly through the narrow sections and leave the quiet area for people who need a break from the crowd. If you're unsure where to go, return to the information point rather than asking staff who are running demonstrations. Enjoy Riverside Eco Park Open Day and make sure you keep the updated program with you. That's the end of part 2. Part 3, research project on shared gardens. Come in, Nina and Omar. I have read your proposal on how shared gardens affect residents' sense of community. The topic is promising, but the method still needs tightening before you collect more data. That's exactly where we're stuck. I think we should focus on interviewing residents who use the gardens every week because it gives us detailed comments and examples. I understand that, but I'm worried the sample will be too small. I would rather collect broader data by running a short questionnaire across 3 housing blocks. Both of you're partly right. I suggest a mixed methods design. The smaller method can show you what to ask, while the wider method can test whether those themes appear beyond a few people. My concern is time. If we do both, we might not finish the analysis properly. Then divide the work clearly. Nina will code the interviews, and Omar will design and analyze the questionnaire. Don't both try to do every stage, or you'll duplicate effort and still feel behind. That split is fair, but I'm not sure what to include in the background section. We have too many articles. Start with a recent review article by Kumar and Lewis. It summarizes the field and will help you select only the studies that connect directly to your research question. What about variables that might affect the result? We discussed some, but we have not listed them in the method. You need to control for age group, length of residence, and whether people have private outdoor space. If you ignore those, your results may look clearer than they really are. I can add those to the survey. I'll also follow your advice to pilot the questions with 2 classmates before sending them out. Good. Piloting will show whether the wording is clear and whether people understand the scale in the same way. We also need to talk about deadlines. The current final deadline is coming too quickly. The original deadline was 12 May. The department will allow an extension to 19 May, but you must request it by 5 May. That helps, but you still need to see something before the final version, don't you?
Yes.
Send me a substantial draft by 10 May. It should include the introduction, method, and at least some early analysis. Could we meet again before that? I would like feedback on the interview coding. Let's meet on Tuesday, the 30th. Bring one coded interview extract and the survey draft, even if they aren't perfect. Should we change the research question to make it easier? Don't change the central question yet. Narrow the evidence instead. A focused mixed methods project is better than a broad project with shallow data. That makes sense. I'll keep the interviews focused on examples, not general opinions. And I'll make the survey shorter so people actually finish it. Exactly. Your aim isn't to collect the maximum amount of data. It's to collect data that answers your question clearly. That's the end of part 3. Part 4, Lecture on Urban Wetlands. Good morning. Today's lecture is about urban wetlands and climate resilience. This subject matters because of the growing pressure of heavy rainfall in dense cities. In many discussions, it's treated as a technical issue, but it also affects behavior, cost, planning, and public expectations. A useful term here's blue-green infrastructure. By this, I mean networks of water features and planted spaces that manage rain while supporting public life. The definition is important because it moves us away from thinking about one isolated product or site and towards a system of decisions. One sector where this is visible is transport planning. In that sector, small choices often accumulate. A single decision may not seem significant, but repeated across a campus, workplace, or city, it changes cost, risk, and the experience of people using the space. Evidence is developing. For example, a 5-year city study found fewer street closures after restored wetlands were connected to drainage channels. This doesn't prove that every intervention will work everywhere, but it shows that carefully designed changes can produce measurable benefits when they fit the local context. There are limitations. Small wetland sites can't compensate for poor drainage across an entire district. This point is often missed in public debate. People like simple solutions, but environmental and social systems rarely respond to one action on its own. The main barrier is competition for land near housing and commercial development. Even when the evidence is persuasive, organizations have budgets, habits, and competing priorities. That's why implementation often depends on leadership as much as on technical knowledge. A practical example comes from a business park that reduced flood cleanup costs after replacing a car park edge with planted basins. The success came not from a slogan, but from changing the everyday process. People were given a simpler route to make the better choice, and the organization measured the result. Policy also has a role. One useful approach is planning rules that reserve low-lying land for water storage before buildings are approved. Such policies don't remove the need for judgment, but they make long-term thinking part of ordinary decisions rather than an optional extra. To conclude, the implication is that cities need to treat wetlands as working infrastructure rather than leftover green decoration. For students and professionals, the key lesson is to ask how a system behaves over time, who carries the cost, and which small decisions make the desired behavior easier. That's the end of part 4.